to be wagging. Each time we stop, children.
I'm Bonnie Faulkner. This is Guns and Butter. Welcome. Today's a fundraiser on our community radio station, and I'm happy to tell you that I'm joined live in the studio by Ralph Schoenman. Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you, Bonnie. Good to be with you.
We have a very exciting show for you today, The Hidden History of Zionism, an incredible book that Ralph Schoenman wrote, and we have 3 hours, actually 2 hours and 45 minutes of an audio presentation of it. We have both the book and the audio for you today.
Well, thank you, Bonnie, and I think that the question of the nature of Zionism in the Israeli state is never more germane than it has been revealed to be now, because the basic strategy of the Zionist movement is to fragment each Arab state in its turn into its ethnic and religious components. And that strategy, devised in the late 1970, was tied to the invention of something called the category of terror. It was the rationale for a permanent process of war, what we now call World War IV, through the advent of what are called the neocons. But essentially, you see the integration within imperial policy of the United States, the stratagems of the Zionist state itself, of course, always a project of the U.S. Capitalist order to undermine the national movement of independence and liberation in the Arab East.
Well, why don't we get started? We're going to play for you now the first 17 minutes of over an hour-long speech that Ralph gave, The Hidden History of Zionism, the same title as this wonderful book that he has written, The Hidden History of Zionism with Ralph Schoenman.
From the Madrid Conference in 1991 to Oslo, many of you are familiar with the Oslo Accords, but there have been many more accords since 1991 with Madrid. Gaza, Jericho, Camp David, the Saudi plan, and now with the roadmap. The game, however, has always been the same. The liquidation of the century-old Palestinian struggle for self-determination. The unspeakable suffering and subjugation of the Palestinian people that we witness unfolding today in the West Bank and Gaza. This suffering and subjugation are but the little continuation of how all of Palestine was colonized. It is a shocking history of armed displacement, massacre, and expulsion that dates back to the 19th century. Tonight, Ralph is going to elucidate on the hidden history of Zionism, and then I'll discuss the roadmap and what is unfolding in the West Bank.
Thank you, Maya. Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks, Lori. And thanks to all of you, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, for coming here for a discussion of an issue that has consumed people and yet suffers from the absence of real concrete data and information pertaining to the nature of Zionism, its origins, its character ideologically, its role historically, and precisely the political process through which Zionism has assumed hegemony in the Middle East, and to no small extent over the centers of imperial policy itself, notably since the events of 9/11. There have been four prevalent myths that have characterized our understanding of the nature of Zionism and of the Israeli state that is based upon it, and particularly in the United States and in Western Europe. The first myth pertains to the claim of a land without a people for a people without a land. The second myth is that of Israeli democracy. Virtually every newspaper and every television story and every reference to the Israeli state is prefaced by the claim that it is the only real democracy in the Middle East and so on. The third myth pertains to security as the motive force of Israeli foreign policy. Here you have a predatory a colonial settler operation which has sought to destabilize each Arab nation in the region and to entrap it and ensnare it in conflict, the better to usurp more territory, presenting itself in a defensive posture. And perhaps the fourth and most prevalent myth has been that of Zionism as the moral legatee of the victims of the Holocaust. And what is particularly savage in the irony that surrounds this claim is the fact that the Zionist movement and the Zionist leaders itself were the active collaborators with the perpetrators of the Holocaust. They participated in the suppression of Jewish resistance, and they organized a consistent opposition to any escape on the part of European Jewry. The objective of Zionism has never merely been to colonize Palestine in the manner in which the colonial powers colonized Africa and Asia and, yes, Latin America. In the latter instance, the objective was to obtain resources and cheap labor in the process of imposing a colonial and imperial hegemony. But what distinguishes Zionism from other colonial movements is the relationship between the settlers and the people to be conquered. Because the avowed purpose of the Zionist movement was not merely to exploit the Palestinian people, but to disperse and to dispossess them. The intent was to replace the indigenous population with a new settler community, to eradicate the farmers, the artisans, and the town dwellers of Palestine, and to substitute a workforce composed of a settler population. And in denying the existence of the Palestinian people, the Zionist movement sought to create the political conditions for their removal, not merely from their land, but from history. When acknowledged at all, the Palestinians have been reinvented as a semi-savage, nomadic remnant. Historic records have been falsified, a procedure that began during the last quarter of the 19th century, but continues to this very day. The Zionist movement would seek, throughout its inception, alternative imperial sponsors for this bloody enterprise. In fact, if you look carefully at the progenitors of Zionism, the upper layers of the haute bourgeoisie in Europe, their basic approach was to treat anti-Semitism as something not only endemic and inevitable, but also of considerable value. They despaired of any alternative to the anti-Semitic climate of the imperial regimes in which they subsisted. And they advocated making common cause with the anti-Semites for the purpose of converting the Jews of Europe into settlers afar. Herzl approached the most anti-Semitic and retrograde regimes of the day. They approached Count von Plehve of the Tsar, the author of the great pogrom at Kishinev and of the Black Hundreds. And they approached them with the proposition that if they funded and armed a Zionist movement to colonize Palestine, the Zionist movement would undertake that task on behalf of Tsarist imperialism representing its commercial interests in the area. And the same pitch was made to the Kaiser, who for over a decade armed and supported and dallied with the Zionist movement. The same approach made to the French Imperium and, of course, to the British Raj. So from its inception, Zionism has seen as its task enlisting the imperial powers and indeed the most retrograde and anti-Semitic of them as the fundamental political economic sponsors of the colonial enterprise itself. And this project embraced as well the fascism of Mussolini. It was Mussolini who funded the Zionist youth movement, particularly Beitar, whose leader was Menachem Begin, who wore the black shirt and gave the fascist salute, which they changed to the brown shirt with the advent of Hitler and Nazism in Europe. And the Zionist movement did not miss a beat with the advent of Nazism in Europe. On the contrary, the local Zionist organization of Germany expressed its open support for the Nazi Party and enlisted the Nazi Party as its sponsors. And the labor Zionists would bring Eichmann to Palestine in the 1930s, Baron von Mildenstein of the SS for a period of 6 months, leading to a 12-part series in the publication of the SS called Der Angriff, which means the assault, praising Zionism, with Heydrich and Himmler overseeing the stamping of a coin with the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other, culminating indeed in the moment when the Zionist movement of Shamir made a formal military pact with the Wehrmacht, discovered in the German embassy in Ankara at the end of the Second World War and known as the Ankara Document. So in understanding the particular political and ideological character of Zionism, both in relation to its victim people, the Palestinians, but notably in relation to the Jews themselves, we then come to comprehend the cruel irony of the ways in which the Zionist movement has wrapped itself in the collective shroud of the 6 million victims of the Holocaust, the better to visit upon itself a moral authority to impose on the Palestinian people a fate rather like that of the Jews in Europe. From its inception, every major spokesperson for the Zionist movement has set forth clearly what was intended in Palestine. It was nothing less than the systematic removal of the Palestinian people, their dispossession, and their elimination. In 1896, Theodor Herzl set forth his plan for inducing the Ottoman Empire to grant Palestine to the Zionist settler movement. If His Majesty the Sultan were to give us Palestine, we will undertake to regulate the finances of Turkey and form an outpost of civilization in opposition to barbarism, defending Turkish imperial and commercial interests in the region. Speaking at this Congress of the World Zionist Organization in 1905, the 7th World Zionist Congress, Max Nordau, a prominent Zionist leader, put forth before the Zionists themselves their concerns. There is a movement which has taken hold of a great part of the Arab people. It is taking a direction which will cause harm in Palestine. The Turkish government will feel itself compelled to defend its reign in Palestine and Syria with armed force. In these circumstances, we can persuade Turkey that they will require us to carry out their particular operations, a strong, well-organized, relentless military group which will suppress this population and eliminate it. The South African connection is a very old one. It does not merely encompass Prime Minister General Jan Smuts, who is South African delegate to the British War Cabinet, pushed the British government to adopt the Balfour Declaration, making a commitment to construct a Zionist colony under British direction. The relationship between Zionism and the South African settlers had evolved much earlier because the settlers played a similar role in South Africa as they would in Palestine. N. Kirshner, the chairman of the South African Zionist Federation, provided a vivid account of the intimate interaction between the Zionists and South African leaders, the identification of Zionists like Weizmann and Herzl with the South African conception of a racially distinct colonizing population. As to Theodor Herzl, the founder of political Zionism, he expressed his fundamental commitment in his modeling of the Zionist program on that quintessential colonial ideologue, Sir Cecil Rhodes. As Herzl wrote about Rhodes, "There are differences between Cecil Rhodes and my humble self, all to my disfavor, to my very great personal disfavor. The objective ones are in favor of our Zionist movement. We will only accomplish the Zionist dispersal of the Palestinians by using the methods pioneered by Rhodes. The Jewish company will be modeled on the colonial chartered company of Rhodes, and it will be a great acquisition company that will carry out its task through military and commercial means. The poorest will first go to cultivate the soil. In accordance with a preconceived land plan, they will construct roads and bridges and railways and telegraphs and regulate rivers and build their own habitations and drive the indigenous population out." One of the ideological forebears of Zionism, Vladimir Jabotinsky, is known as the founder of revisionist Zionism, that Zionist current which had little patience with the liberal and socialist facade employed by labor Zionists. In 1923, Jabotinsky wrote The Iron Wall, which is a benchmark essay for the entire Zionist movement, in which he sets forth bluntly and clearly the premises of Zionism. They had indeed been laid out in the diaries of Theodor Herzl and in the political writings of Chaim Weizmann, if not as eloquently as the declaration of Jabotinsky, known as the Iron Wall. "There can be no discussion of reconciliation between us and Palestinian Arabs, not now, not in the future. All well-meaning people, with the exception of those blind from birth, have understood long ago the complete and utter impossibility at arriving at agreements with the Arabs of Palestine, for the transformation of Palestine from Arab country to a country under utter control of Jews. Each of you has some general understanding of the history of colonization. Try to find even one example when the colonization of a country takes place with the agreement of the native population. Such an event has never occurred. The natives will always struggle obstinately against colonists, and it is all the same whether they are cultured or uncultured. The comrades in arms of Hernan Cortes and Francisco Pizarro conducted themselves like brigands. The Redskins fought with uncompromising fervor against both evil and so-called good-hearted colonizers. The natives will struggle against any form, any kind of colonization, anywhere and at any time, because it is inadmissible to them. Any native people views their country as their national home, of which they will be masters, and they will never voluntarily allow a new master who drives them out. So it is for the Arabs. Compromisers among us try to convince us that Palestinians are some kind of fools who can be tricked with hidden formulations of our basic goals. I flatly refuse to accede to this view of the Palestinian Arabs. They have the precise psychology that any oppressed people has. They look upon Palestine with the same instinctive love and true fervor that any Aztec look upon his Mexico or any Sioux upon his prairie. This people will struggle against colonizers until the last spark of hope that they can avoid the dangers of conquest and colonization is extinguished. Yes, the Palestinians will struggle in this way until we have removed the last spark of hope. It matters not what words we use to explain our colonization. Colonization has an integral, inescapable meaning. It is understood by every Jew and by every Arab. We have but one goal. It is in the nature of things. We shall carry on this colonization against the will of the Palestinian Arabs. That condition exists now. It will subsist in the future, and we will never relinquish it. And even an agreement with non-Palestinians represents the same kind of fantasy. For in order for genuine Arab nationalists of Baghdad and Mecca and Damascus to agree to pay so serious a price, they would have to abandon the Arab character of Palestine. For we shall not give compensation for Palestine neither to Palestinians or to other Arabs. A voluntary agreement is inconceivable. Let us be clear about that. Even the most restricted colonization would only be possible in defiance of the will of the native populace. Ours will continue to develop only under a shield of force, which comprises an iron wall through which this people will never break through. This is our Arab policy. To formulate it any other way is hypocrisy. Whether through the Balfour Declaration or the mandate, external force is the necessity for establishing in this country conditions of rule through which this people, regardless of its wishes, will be deprived of all possible physical and administrative means of impeding us. Force, relentless force, will play its role without indulgence. And in this, let us be clear, there is no meaningful difference between our militarists and our vegetarians. One prefers an iron wall of Jewish bayonets, the other an iron wall of English bayonets. And to the hackneyed reproach that this point of view is unethical, we say untrue. This is our ethic. There is no other ethic. As long as there remains the faintest spark of hope for Palestinians to impede us, they will not sell these hopes, not for any sweet words nor for any tasty moral, because this is not a rabble, but a people, a living people. And no people makes such enormous concessions on such fateful questions of existence, except when there is no hope left, until we have removed any remnant, every opening visible in the iron wall.
You've been listening to Ralph Schoenman, a very, very powerful speech given last year in Marin. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. I'm joined by Ralph Schoenman today. This is Guns and Butter. Today is a fundraiser for our community radio station, KPFA. Where else on Guns and Butter could you hear such a powerful speech about the hidden History of Zionism. We want to break briefly and let you know about our premiums today, and then we can get back to the audio. You've been listening to the first 20 minutes of over an hour-long speech by Ralph Schoenman, followed by a speech by Maya Schoen on the roadmap in Palestine, followed by questions and answers from the audience. We're offering you today this audio, this two CD set, The Hidden History of Zionism, for a generous contribution today of $100 to Free Speech Radio, KPFA. Please give us a call at 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or here in the East Bay, 510-848-5732. I also wanted to let you know that we also today are happy to offer the hardback copy of the book by the same name by Ralph Schoenman, his seminal work on Zionism, The Hidden History of Zionism. It's a beautiful hardcover cloth book, and Ralph is going to sign them for you. We can offer you the hardback copy of The Hidden History of Zionism for a contribution to KPFA today of $150. You can have both the audio and the hardback book signed by Ralph for a $230 contribution to keep Free Speech Radio on the air. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Please give us a call, 1-800-439-5732. Please support the programming we bring you every week on Guns and Butter. We're volunteers. We produce these programs for you. Give us a call, 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732. I'm very pleased to let you know that Ralph Schoenman is here with me in the studio.
Well, Bonnie, thank you so much. I think what is particularly apposite about this incredible pattern in history of subjugation and basically ethnic cleansing that characterized the ways in which the Palestinian people, almost 85% of the Palestinian people, driven out through a series of massacres from one end of the country to the other, the utter decimation of their cities and their villages, of 475 Palestinian towns and villages, 385 razed to the ground, reduced to rubble, of the remaining 90, all the land seized, the population driven out, and legislation put into force immediately that stipulated that in order to be entitled to own land, rent it, lease it, sharecrop it, you had to prove at least four generations of maternal Jewish descent. As I like to say, if anyone in the United States were put before the prospect that in order to be able to live on land or to work it or to lease it, you had to show you had no Jewish blood for at least four generations, everybody would immediately understand the racist nature of such an enterprise. And this state has been funded and sustained by the United States from its inception, over $100 billion. It works out to about $30,000 per Israeli citizen. It is essentially an extension of U.S. imperialism in the region, and its intelligence apparatus, the Mossad, has been in the forefront of all of the most pernicious false flag operations that have characterized the subjugation of peoples from one end of the planet to the other, integral with the Central Intelligence Agency, but always with a particular license for the kinds of special force torment, assassination, eliminations that have characterized imperial policy in the past century. And now when we consider what is being proposed and what passed for debates, Bonnie, in this pseudo-presidential election, I say pseudo because the framework and the parameters are entirely confined to the tactics and the needs of imperial policy itself. Extraordinary that the Democratic Party candidates are flanking Bush from the right, promising to increase the troops in Iraq by 40,000, committed to undertake the prospect of preemption, signaling that they intend to facilitate an Israeli strike, missile strike on Tehran. It's not only that Kerry has called for this, and Edwards, and Kerry's brother Cameron Kerry in Jerusalem, criticizing and attacking the Bush and Cheney regime for not being sufficiently supportive of Ariel Sharon. And on October 1st, the Democratic keynote speaker Barack Obama calling for missile strikes on Iran and attacking the Bush administration for being lax in undertaking this. This is about the hidden history of Zionism and its relation to imperialism. So we ask people who want to have a documented record of what this is,
which informs what policy is about, which defines why these elections are elections only of the ruling group, confining politics within their parameters. And it really goes to the question of why we've organized the Million Worker March, which we consider on October 17th to be the real election, the election of working people to put forward their own agenda. But we ask for people to sustain this kind of free speech radio and the documentation and the information that it only on a publicly supported, listener-supported station and only on a program like Guns and Butter can that sort of understanding information and ammunition for political struggle be provided.
Please give us a call, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or 510-848-5732. We have a hardbound copy of The Hidden History of Zionism. If you want to read about the true history, the true nature of the Zionist project in the Middle East, it's all here. It's very concise. It's a beautifully written book by Ralph Schoenman, our gift to you today. And Ralph's going to sign them for you, by the way, for a $150 contribution to KPFA. Give us a call, 1-800-439-5732. Also, if you prefer the audio, we have a 2-CD set of The Hidden History of Zionism, Ralph's speech, Maya Schoen on the roadmap in the Middle East, and questions and answers from the audience. You know, Ralph, the questions and the answers from the questions from the audience were very interesting because people really dug into you about what this was about and what you were proposing. The Q&A is very, very interesting.
Well, it goes to the question of which way forward, and not only in Palestine, of course, but in the Middle East at large. And it touches on what I consider to be the illusion of what has been in the past called a two-state solution. Because in actuality, Bonnie, and this gets discussed in some detail and with some passion and energy, if you look at the response of anybody who understood the importance of self-determination for the oppressed. When did we ask the people of South Africa to first guarantee a settler state in Johannesburg and in Durban and in Cape Town as a predicate for being allowed some Bantustan unarmed and under the economic hegemony of the settler state? Is that what we said to the people of Zambia when they were northern Rhodesia, that Roy Walensky should establish an exclusively white settler state in Lusaka as the predicate for the African people to be allowed little locations in the countryside where they could have pseudo-autonomy? Is that what was said to Zimbabwe in southern Rhodesia? Did we say that to the people of Algeria or Tunisia or Morocco? Why this indecent exceptionalism when it comes to the people of Palestine? This is a colonial project, and its imperial sponsors deploy it, as we just saw 5,000 of the most advanced JDAMs and weapons sent to Sharon, because they're openly talking about initiating an attack both on Syria and on Iran. And you have Cameron Kerry, the brother of John Kerry, there assuring Sharon of support for Kerry, announcing that the Middle East envoy that Kerry would appoint when elected will be who? James Baker III. This is one imperial policy, and Israel is its instrument, and the people of the Arab East are its target, and the oil that is being sequestered there by direct control has been under imperial covetous design by every administration since 1964. That's what this is about. That's why we have to mobilize in our own name, brothers and sisters, because on November 3rd, it ain't going to be any different. Whichever one of these characters is in office without power, it'll be the same old, same old. Our task is to organize, mobilize, build a struggle in our own name, because the repression you see in Gaza today will be the repression you see in Berkeley tomorrow.
Please give us a call. 1-800-439-5732. The Hidden History of Zionism, either the hard copy, the hardback book by Ralph Schoenman, or the 2-CD set of the audio. You can either have the audio or the book or both. You're not going to get this history much of any other place. Please support the programming that Ralph and I, and Maya Schoen, and Yarrow Mako bring you every week here on Guns and Butter by pledging today on Guns and Butter. Give us a call, 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. Ralph, what do you think we should play next? The The massacres? The clearing of the land?
Why not, Bonnie? I will elucidate about this, but I would like people to understand that what we're doing here is not describing a history which is abstract or unrelated to our immediate and urgent present. Everything about the occupation of Palestinian land and the project of essentially eliminating a Palestinian presence, whether in Gaza or in the West Bank, is pertinent to the war plans of the United States, because this is the way in which they destabilize the region and keep peoples on the defensive there and prevent a cohesive development of a movement of fight back in Palestine.
Give us a call, 1-800-439-5732. Please support this programming. You can learn the real history of the Zionist Project, 1-800-439-5732.
We need that support for this free speech radio station and for Guns and Butter. Please, please, please call in.
Within days, and indeed weeks, the process of eliminating the population of Palestine was unfolding. The Judaizing of the land, the seizure of the land. And I think it's essential that we also bear in mind that all of the major spokespersons of the Zionist movement had proclaimed this as their essential objective. In 1940, Joseph Weitz, the head of the Jewish Agency's Colonization Department under David Ben-Gurion, responsible for the organization of settlement in Palestine, wrote, "Between ourselves, let us be clear, there is no room for Palestinians in this country. We shall not achieve our objective if they are allowed to remain. There will be no other way. We will transfer them, all of them, not one village, not one tribe, not one clan shall be left." As for Ben-Gurion and the labor Zionists, in a speech to the Zionist meeting on October 13, 1936, Ben-Gurion said, "We do not suggest that we have renounced our ultimate aim, which is far-reaching, far more than the revisionists who oppose partition. The final vision, an organic, spiritual, ideological component of my Zionist aspirations, is clear. It is the elimination of the Palestinian population." And in the same year, Ben-Gurion, in a letter to his son, "A partial Jewish state is not the end, it is only the beginning. We cannot be prevented from settling in all parts of that region." In 1937, "The boundaries of Zionist aspiration are the concern of the Jews alone, and no external factor will limit us." By 1938, Ben-Gurion is explicit. "The boundaries of Zionist aspiration," he told the World Council of Poel Zion in Tel Aviv, "include, in the first instance, southern Lebanon, southern Syria, today's Jordan, all of Cisjordan, and the Sinai." He formulated, did Ben-Gurion, Zionist strategy very clearly. "When we've become the dominant force as the result of the creation of the state, we shall abolish this partition and expand to the whole of Palestine, and that is but a stage in the realization of Zionism. Its task is to prepare the ground now for our expansion. This state will preserve its order not by preaching, but with machine guns." By May of 1948, here is Ben-Gurion to the General Staff: "Prepare to go over to the defensive. Smash Lebanon, Transjordan, and Syria. The weak point is Lebanon. This regime is artificial. It will be easy for us to undermine it. We shall establish a puppet Christian state there, and then we shall smash the Arab legions, eliminate Transjordan. Syria will fall to us. We then bomb and move on. We take Port Said, Alexandria, and the Sinai." And when General Yigal Alon asked Ben-Gurion, "Well, what do we do with the population of Lida and Ramla, 50,000 inhabitants?" Ben-Gurion, as his biographer describes, waved his hand and said, "You know what to do. Drive them out." Every major spokesperson, there is nothing obscure, concealed, or unstated about the Zionist record of liquidation. The Koenig Report: "We will use terror, assassination, intimidation, land confiscation, the cutting of all social services to rid the Galilee of its Arab populace." Chairman Heilbrun of the Committee for the Re-election of General Shlomo Lahat, the mayor of Tel Aviv: "We shall kill all the Palestinians unless they are resigned to live here as slaves." And here are the words of Yuri Lubrani, David Ben-Gurion's special advisor in Arab affairs in 1960. We shall reduce the Palestinian population to a community of woodcutters and waiters. And Raphael Eitan, the chief of staff of Israel's armed forces, we declare openly, the Palestinian Arabs have no right to settle on even 1 centimeter of Eretz Israel. You good souls should know that the gas chambers of Adolf Hitler will be as a recreational palace. Force is all they do or ever will understand, and we shall use the ultimate force until the Palestinians come crawling to us on all fours. Eitan elaborated before the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee a formal declaration. When we have settled this land, all the Arabs will be able to do is scurry around like drugged roaches in a bottle. Well, then, how did they go about it and what did they do? The process, as I said, was one of sustained slaughter. Village after village was wiped out. The killing was intended to cause people to flee for their lives. The commander of the Haganah, Zvi Ankori, described it in detail. We oversaw cut-off genitalia, women's crushed stomachs. It was direct murder. Menachem Begin would gloat over the impact throughout Palestine of the Nazi-like operations that he commanded at Deir Yassin. A legend of terror spread amongst Arabs who were seized with panic at the mere mention of our soldiers. It was worth dozens of battalions to our forces. Palestinians throughout the country were seized with limitless panic and fled for their lives. This mass flight developed into a maddened, uncontrollable stampede. Of the 800,000 Arabs who lived on the present territory of Israel, only 165,000 are still there. The political and economic significance of this achievement can hardly be overestimated. Here is an eyewitness account of this process. This is, by the way, by Red Cross personnel. It was noon when the battles had ended and the shooting stopped. Things had become quiet, but the villages had not surrendered. The Zionist soldiers left the places in which they had been hiding and now carried out cleaning up operations. They fired with all arms they had. They threw explosives into buildings. They shot everyone they saw, women and children. The commanders made no attempt to check the disgraceful slaughter. I myself and a number of our personnel begged the commanders to give orders to their men to stop, but these were unsuccessful. People were brought out of their houses. They were loaded into freight trucks and led in a victory parade like a Roman triumph through to Mahane Yehuda and Zichron Yosef in Jerusalem. They were then taken to the stone quarry between Gavat Shaul and Deir Yassin and shot in cold blood. The women and children who were alive still were taken on trucks, taken out to the Mandelbaum Gate, and shot there. The director of the International Red Cross in Palestine, Jacques de Renier, then attempted to intervene as word of the slaughter spread as it was unfolding in village after village. The commanders would not receive me. At last, one of them arrived, young, distinguished, and perfectly correct, with a peculiar glitter in his eyes, cold and cruel. According to him, the Haganah had arrived and had ordered inhabitants by loudspeaker to evacuate their houses. Some of these miserable people came forward, and we dealt with them as was their deserts. There's no point in exaggerating things. You will find the dead, and they will be buried as soon as the cleanup is finished. The accounts made my blood run cold. I went back to the Jerusalem road, got ambulances and trucks. I alerted the Red Shield. I tried to reach villages by convoy to alert them. The gangs of Haganah were wearing uniforms with helmets, young adolescents, men and women armed to the teeth, revolvers, machine guns, hand grenades, cutlasses in their hands, blood-stained. A beautiful young girl with criminal eyes showing me hers, dripping with blood, displaying it like a trophy. This was their cleanup team, and they were performing their task conscientiously. I tried to go into houses. Dozens of soldiers surrounded me, their machine guns aimed at my body, their officers forbidding me to move. I flew into one of the most towering rages of my life, telling these criminals what I thought of their conduct, threatening them with everything I could think of, and then pushed them aside and went into the houses. There was darkness, everything in disorder, disemboweled furniture. I found the bodies cold. The cleanup had been done with knives. Anyone could see that. I looked everywhere, turned over all the bodies. I found a little foot still warm, a little girl of 10, mutilated but still alive, everywhere. The same horrible sign, village after village. All had been massacred in cold blood. For as I observed for myself, this gang was admirably disciplined and acting under orders. And his detailed account continues for pages. Here is the account in Davar, the official Hebrew daily newspaper of the labor Zionist-run Histadrut, General Federation of Workers. This is the fate of the population of Douema. They killed hundreds of Arab men, women, and children. To kill the children, they fractured their heads with sticks. There was not one home without corpses. The men and women of the villages were pushed into houses without food or water. Then the soldiers came to dynamite them. Commander had ordered soldiers to bring women into buildings they were about to blow up. Soldiers prided themselves on raping the Palestinian women before shooting them to death. Palestinian women with their newborn children were made to clean the place for days, and then they were shot and the infants. Educated, well-mannered commanders, who were considered good guys, became base murderers, and this not in the storm of battle, but as a method of expulsion and extermination. Our orders were, the fewer the Arabs who remain, the better. This program of massacre continued from one end of Palestine to the other for the next 10 years, through Gaza, from Khalil to al-Jalil, village after village, town after town. Kfar Qasim, the massacre at Kfar Qasim followed the Zionist pattern. October 1956, Israeli Brigadier Shadni, the commander of the battalion on the Israeli-Jordanian border, ordered curfews imposed on the minority Palestinian villages. These villages were inside the Israeli borders. Their inhabitants were considered citizens. The commander of the unit, Major Malinki, was told that a curfew must be extremely strict. Any who broke it would be shot on the spot. Indeed, they were not to be informed of the curfew. He, Malinki, informed the assembled officers that their task was to impose the curfew throughout the villages. Anyone leaving their home, anyone breaking the curfew, would be shot dead. There would be no arrests. If people were killed in the night, this would facilitate the imposition of the curfew on succeeding nights. Lieutenant Frankenthal asked, "What do we do with the wounded?" Malinki replied, "Take no notice of them." The section leader asked, "What about the women and children?" Malinki replied, "No sentimentality." When asked, "What about people returning from their work?" "It's too bad about them." The perpetrators of the Kfar Qasim massacre, which was a commando unit of Ariel Sharon's Commando Unit 101, were all rewarded with medals and with promotions in the Israeli armed forces. It is through this process that over 485 villages and towns were seized and emptied of their population and the land confiscated. Of 475 towns and villages, 385 were reduced to rubble and wiped off the map.
The Hidden History of Zionism by Ralph Schoenman. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. This is Guns and Butter. Today we're in a fundraiser for KPFA Radio. Please support this programming that we bring you on Guns and Butter. People don't know this history. You really need to get the book or the CDs, pass them around to friends. People do not understand this history. You need to know this history to fully understand the liberation struggle of the Palestinian people. Please give us a call. Please support this programming. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. You can have the hardbound first edition copy of The Hidden History of Zionism by Ralph Schoenman, signed by Ralph Schoenman, for a generous contribution of $150. You can get the two CD set of the 2 hour and 40 minute audio, The Hidden History of Zionism, for a $100 contribution. Those of you who can afford $230, you can have both the book, both the CDs. You need to know this history. Most people do not understand this history. And in order to understand the present struggles, you need this book, these CDs. You need this history. Most people don't know anything about this. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 239-5732 or 510-848-5732. Ralph and I want to thank a few people who have called in and pledged. Please join them. We're getting a great response. You need this information. Thank you, Jan Tiura, Moss Beach, for a generous contribution. Byron DL of Fresno, thank you. Ron Evans, El Sobrante. Nadja Anas, San Rafael. Margaret Coolington of San Rafael, thank you. Flora Dursey, Sonoma, thank you. George Abrams, Point Arena. Basma Youssef, Fremont, thank you. Please keep calling. We have two open lines, 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. You're not going to get this information anywhere else. This is available here. These are first edition books. Ralph is going to sign them for you. You need this history. You're not going to find a discussion like this about the true nature of the Zionist Project anywhere else but here on Guns and Butter and on Ralph and Maya's show, Taking Aim, in New York on our sister station, WBAI. I also want to thank Alan Chia of Fresno, Margaret Ann Bollock of Santa Cruz. Thank you, Margaret. Michael Ford of Oakland. Camille Russell of Fresno, Patricia Stamm of, I don't know what town that is, but thank you, Patricia. Martin Santos, Fresno, Dragonfly in Nevada City. Thank you, Dragonfly. You must be listening on the Internet. Give us a call, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732. We have a few open lines, 510-848-5732.
90% unemployment in Gaza, brothers and sisters. Gaza under siege. The refugee camps of Jabalia and the beach camp where Maya and I lived for a period of time under total siege. No water, no electricity, a blockade of food, sustained saturation missile attacks, eradicating the residences that are so deprived, the population itself. Targeted for what? Targeted for not just subjugation, but ultimately for expulsion. That is the project in Gaza that's unfolding before our eyes as we speak, while John Edwards, in his debate with Cheney, mules about the Palestinians not having any rights whatsoever because the Israelis have the right to defend themselves. When a people so oppressed seeks to resist, what are they called? They're called terrorists. When a population, because all means of resistance are taken from it, resorts to the fight back that was characteristic of the resistance to Nazi occupation of Norway, of Yugoslavia, and of France, how are they characterized and how are they treated? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And what you see unfolding today, brothers and sisters, in Samarra and in Baghdad and in Fallujah is the little continuation of this same colonial enterprise. It is an imperial project. It is a project that requires the subjugation of the American people, because sustained war means trillions of dollars sequestered for these brutal ends. So, brothers and sisters, they are measuring our shrouds as they pursue these policies throughout the Arab East. The Patriot Act is about that. The false flag operation of 9/11 is the quintessential rationale for all that we see unfolding around us. We are in the business of building a resistance, and free speech radio is central to it. We have to be able to get information to people, to mobilize our brothers and sisters with knowledge so that we are equipped for the struggles that lie ahead. The Million Worker March is a beginning. It's the opening note of a vast mobilization. The anti-war movement, the real election for all those opposed to these wars is happening on October 17th. Call 1-800-439-5732. Call in your pledge. Please support Free Speech Radio. The Hidden History of Zionism will give you the data, meticulously documented, that will arm you for the struggles that lie ahead of us.
I'm Susan Stone, dropping in on Guns and Butter team here because we are so grateful for, as Bonnie Faulkner, your host today, mentioned earlier, the labor, the free labor, the indefatigable labor of our volunteer radio production force. It's just incredible what Bonnie's been doing over these years here since bringing Guns and Butter to us in the days after 9/11. And I thank Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen as well, who have developed so many of these programs coming to these Guns and Butter listeners these many, many months here at 94.1 FM. It is the second day of our fun drive. And if I may just say a little bit about this important show, while they take a moment of a breath here, this is a show which is so unique because, again, as you may know, if you've listened before or if you've only just turned in today, it's founded on the investigations and profiles of those who are digging ever deeper to explore and explain the truth and the facts, not only behind things like the 9/11 Commission, but left behind in things like the 9/11 Commission, as well as digging so deep to bring you the reports as they've brought today on the hidden history of Zionism. Ralph talking at great length about the suppressed intelligence and the subjugation of and elimination of peoples that you will not hear anywhere else. This program taking among the deepest, harshest looks you'll hear anywhere into U.S. imperialism. Guns and Butter is the program. You're calling. You support it. 1-800-439-5732. As Ralph was saying, the true nature of the Zionist project in the Middle East being exposed here, being explored here in his Find a Levery. 1-800-439-5732. I just wanted to say on behalf of those of us who do work here upstairs on a paycheck that we couldn't do it without the extraordinary talents of those who aren't getting a paycheck here. We work together and we couldn't do it without you. And Bonnie, you're a fine example of that.
That's so nice. Thank you, Susan.
Well, it's the honest truth, baby. So we're very grateful to you for bringing this show to life and for making it count for so many of the listeners who are calling now to express their support and who have called over the years. So please do it now. Second day of our fun drive. We're here for a couple more weeks. Now's the time to show support for Guns and Butter.
Thank you, Susan. And I can't say enough about the hidden history of Zionism. This first edition book, which we offer you today, which Ralph and Maya are so generous to offer the listeners today for a $150 contribution. Please give us a call at 1-800-439-5732. As I mentioned before, no one knows this history. No one understands this history because it has been suppressed. But Ralph's book, as he mentioned, it's all documented. It's all there. If you want to learn about the past, to understand the present and the future that we're looking at, you need this book. Or you need the CDs if you prefer the audio. Best yet, get both for a $230 contribution to Free Speech Radio. Nowhere else are you going to hear about this history. Please give us a call, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or 510-848-5732. I want to thank Hal Searlstad in Kensington. Thank you, Hal. Catherine Smick in Lafayette. Ralph, I can't read that one.
Yes. It looks to me like Rothman. Rahman Muhammad. Rahman Muhammad. Thank you, Rahman.
Thank you, Ralph.
Shukran jadan.
Diane Solis in San Francisco. Thank you, Diane. Charles Jennings in Kensington. Ann Jackson, Fresno. Thank you. Give us a call, 1-800-439-5732. You need this history. You need this book. You need the audio. You can pass this around to friends. You can donate it to a library. Most people are completely ignorant of this history. 1-800-439-5732.
And it goes, as we discuss in the Hidden History of Zionism and the presentation, Bonnie, to the sustained collaboration of the Zionist leadership with the Nazi movement itself. This is perhaps the least well-known and the least discussed aspect of the real character of the Zionist state, because they saw, as I mentioned, in the anti-Semitic regimes their most reliable sponsors. And indeed, they solicited and obtained the financial and military support from the Nazi leadership, particularly insofar as the Zionists colluded in preventing the non-Zionist Jews, which was the overwhelming majority, from any attempt either at resistance or from escape. The paradigm of this was when the Ben-Gurion leadership approached Adolf Eichmann in 1944 and struck a deal with him, sacrificing the Hungarian Jews for the
support for a Zionist leadership and for a Zionist project. The Kastner report, which was an expose of this, became the subject of a major trial in Israel. The documentation of this is vast and complete. It's set forth in the Hidden History of Zionism. It goes to the question of what way forward for the Jewish population of Palestine itself, as with, for example, the French of Algeria or the Dutch and English inhabitants of Africa. It can only be in a society, a democratic and secular society, in which citizenship does not depend on ethnic origin or religious affiliation. That is a project that has the future of human beings in the region at its center. If you're interested in developing this struggle, which is integral to the process of defending ourselves against U.S. imperialism and U.S. capital exploitation itself, the fate of our own people is so bound up with this, please support this information, support Free Speech Radio, 1-800-439-5732. The Hidden History of Zionism, and implicit and explicit in this, the way forward, a solution of struggle for the oppressed, and for a conjunction between those who live in this area having equal rights in a struggle for a state that does not depend upon exploitation and oppression.
Give us a call. Please support this programming. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. We've got some open lines. You need this book. You need to understand this history. We don't understand this history. We need this to understand the present struggles of the Palestinian liberation movement in Palestine. Please give us a call, 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. We have first edition hardback copies of The Hidden History of Zionism signed for you by Ralph Schoenman for a $150 contribution to KPFA Radio. We also have the audio on two CDs for a $100 contribution. Please give us a call. Please support this programming. I'd like to get all of these lights lit up before we get off the air. We have five open lines. Please fill these lines. Please support us. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Please give us a call. Please get this book. Please get this audio.
And please support Free Speech Radio and support the Million Worker March, which is the political expression. It's endorsed by KPFA. It's endorsed by WBAI. It will be covered by Pacific on October 17th. This is our struggle forward, brothers and sisters. Please keep the struggle going.
1-800-439-5732. Thank you. Please keep calling.
Hey, yo, these are some serious times that we're living in, Gene. And her new world order is about to begin. You know what I'm saying? Now the question is, are you ready for the real...
In time-